Live from Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. Well, tonight the buzz is that former President Donald Trump is expected to announce that he will run for president once again. His potential announcement is scheduled for 6 p.m. our time and comes 1 week after the midterm in which his party and several of his chosen candidates failed to take back the Senate and made marginal gains in the House despite President Biden's low approval rating. In the House today, California Congressman Kevin McCarthy will face a critical test. GOP members are holding a leadership election as ballots are still being counted for the final makeup of Congress. Meantime, here in California, Governor Newsom and many of his Democrats cruised to victory last week, all while speculation continues to grow about Newsom's future and if it includes a 2024 presidential run, potentially taking on Trump and Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, another presumed presidential candidate for 2024. There's a lot going on. So joining us is Robin Swanson, Democratic strategist and founder of Swanson Communications, and Republican political consultant Mike Madrid, co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you.
Thanks for having us on.
Thanks for making the time. Well, for both of you, I mean, it's been a week since the midterm election votes still being tallied. We have just been inundated with the red wave that wasn't in the days since. Is that the big headline for the both of you, or are there other takeaways being neglected from the conversation? Mike, I'll start with you.
Well, I think from my estimation, I mean, in many ways, once the euphoria settles, we're going to realize this was really kind of the election that was much ado about nothing. This will be $9 billion spent, the most ever in a midterms. And what we'll probably see is a shift of one or two seats in the Senate at the most, and probably a swing of 5 to 8 seats in the House. We've never had an election, I don't think in the country's history, that has had such a marginal amount of seats change hands. Now, the ramifications of it are extraordinary. And the Democrats, of course, historically held back these enormous expectations that the Republicans raised up. So in many ways, it feels like a whole lot changed. The gavel will probably leave Nancy Pelosi's hands, hand it over to another Californian, possibly Kevin McCarthy. So there are some significant outcomes, but in terms of what actually moved, shifted, and changed, there really wasn't that much.
Did the underwhelming performance by the GOP surprise you?
Yeah, I mean, but not by as much as one might expect. The polling was actually incredibly accurate. The quality polling was very, very accurate. There was this late rush to kind of flood the zone with these bad partisan polls that the Republicans were, for whatever reason, I'm not even too sure why, maybe just to confuse the outcomes of the elections and the narrow victories. But the polling was pretty accurate. It was all saying this is very, very close. There were some extremely peculiar regional variations. There was no question an enormous red wave in Florida. Nobody expected DeSantis to win by the enormous margin he did, but there was an equally big blue wave in states like Michigan and the Great Lakes that nobody was expecting. And if you go kind of state by state, they each tell a different story. And that's very anomalous, at least over the past 3 decades in national politics, where partisanship has really defined how voters vote. That was not the case here. It's clear Republican women specifically defected and were voting for Democrats. It seems higher in states where there were abortion measures on the ballot. The Dobbs decision really was a political earthquake in the summer, in the late spring, and it still hasn't reset. I mean, I think when we look back, most of the prognostications are going to have to point to the fact that women moved decisively to the Democrats' column, Republican women, young women, and that was what made this bulwark against this Republican wave possible.
Robin, what was the big takeaway for you this midterm?
Sure. I mean, the red wave was a red whimper for sure. And I actually think the optimistic piece of me is that there's going to have to be bipartisanship. It may be forced, but even Kevin McCarthy is going to have to work with Democrats if he wants to get anything done. He's going to have a razor thin majority if he indeed gets a majority. And I understand that he's, you know, one seat away from that, but don't measure the curtains just yet. But to get anything done, he's going to have certain Republicans that are going to defect because they think that they're going to own the agenda, and he is going to have to reach out to Democrats. So I think that is a big takeaway. And of course, the overwhelming rejection of Trumpism and Trump himself and election deniers. Voters were very smart. They articulated that they didn't want candidates who didn't understand the results of an election, and they didn't support them. And then I think the other big takeaway for me is seeing these governors' races in Arizona and Massachusetts and Maryland go Democrat. I think those were great takeaways for Democrats across the country. So I think Democrats have a lot to be positive about. And I think moderates can be hopeful that they're going to get some kind of an agenda because politicians are going to be forced to work with each other.
All right, well, let's get to former President Trump. Mike, I know you're not a fan of his, but he is expected to announce another run for president later this evening. Mm-hmm. Where are their windows of opportunity following a midterm that may challenge the confidence that he's the right candidate for 2024?
Well, look, I think the Republicans are damned if they do, damned if they don't, because they can't win with him and they can't win without him. That's what they've learned, finally. Look, I also think it's fair to say now, with hindsight, there has never really been a good Trump election year. Even 2016, he lost the popular vote by the largest national margin ever. 2018, Republicans lost in a historic way. 2020, he loses re-election. In 2022, just, last Tuesday night, they can't muster victories in what should have been an extremely big Republican year. So, like, where does this leave the party? It literally cannot do without him. By the way, he's not going to go away quietly into the sunset, right? He just doesn't have that capacity. Irrelevancy for him is a fate worse than death, and he's not going to give up the power that he has over the Republican Party, although it's clearly waning. And even if he holds on to 10 or 15% of the base, which he can hold on probably three or four times that, it will be a bloody, dissolution of a party that has been shrinking over the years. So in many ways, what we're seeing nationally in 2022 is a lot like we are seeing in California as Republicans in the late 1990s. It's a party that can't figure out whether it wants to expand its base or double down on its shrinking base. If California is a sign of the future, as it usually is, I think it's clear that the party is going to continue to have an extraordinary amount of problems.
Is Trump the same candidate from 2016 when he defied expectations?
I don't see how that's possible. I mean, anything can happen. That's what I've learned, during the Trump era, is anything is possible. But demographically and situationally, it just does not look like he's going to be able to pull this together. In 2020, we were able to beat Donald Trump as a group of Republicans by getting what I called the Bannon line, which was 5 to 7% of Republicans to defect. We're looking at numbers last night of 11% of Republicans defecting, probably double or triple that with independents. It's getting worse for the Republicans, and it has been for the last three election cycles. I think the establishment as it exists has figured that out, and we're just going to have to see if they can exorcise the demon from their midst, or if they will just continue to placate, a man who has an uncanny control over the party.
Yeah, I think the last Republican president to get the popular vote was Bush.
Yeah, and that was one of the last eight elections. I mean, there's just no roadmap to expand. What Republicans have learned to do is literally win by subtraction. Meaning if you can catalyze and anger the right people in the right 27 electoral map of 270, you can win races by losing the popular vote by wide and wider and wider margins. Nobody ever figured that would be a strategy. The founders weren't saying, how do you game this? But that's what they've learned to do. The question is, how sustainable is that long term now that Democrats are very competitive in states like Arizona and Georgia? And Wisconsin's a little bit more difficult, but a lot of traditionally red states have moved to a more purple or blue position.
Robin, you were saying how, the Democrats can see some optimism following the midterm. What does a Trump candidacy potentially trigger for the Democratic Party? Is it a good thing? Is that the right candidate that Democrats would want?
Yes, please. So, yes, if they're going to continue to embrace Trump, they are going to continue to fail epically. And, voters' sign of no confidence is not internalized by Donald Trump. His confidence has always far surpassed his capabilities. And I think the difference in previous elections is that voters didn't know exactly what they were getting, right? I mean, voters saw sort of the TV personality. They thought they were getting a businessman. His persona was very different, I think, in some ways, than his actual execution as a commander-in-chief, as the leader of the country. And so now that voters have seen what Trump has to offer, they have heartily rejected it. And I think it'd be very difficult for him to win any kind of re-election. And I feel reassured that his candidates went down in flames in this cycle.
Given that leading up to the midterm, President Biden had low approval ratings, is he the right candidate for the Democratic Party in 2024?
He's evaluating, and it's funny, there was a funny Saturday Night Live skit over the weekend, I think, and it was going through all the different candidates, and then everybody comes back to Biden. So he is the most viable candidate right now, but there are definitely stars in the making. Let's not forget Vice President Harris, and certainly Governor Gavin Newsom seems to be prepping for the future, whenever that future might be. So I think Democrats have a deep bench. But Biden has said at this point he's going to run, but he will make his decision in the coming year. So I guess we'll see.
When it comes to the House, there are still a lot of races up in the air, especially in California. One of the races that we've been watching is the newly drawn District 3. It's this huge district in California. Currently, Kevin Kiley, who was endorsed by President Trump, leading by about 10,000 votes against Democrat Kermit Jones, with just about 53% of the expected vote in. Mike, what does that tell you? Because he was endorsed by the former president.
Well, look, a lot of these races are really, the margins is really what we're looking at. Kiley is should be doing better than he is. I think it's a pretty safe Republican district. When the dust settles, I'm sure that he'll win. But look, Gavin Newsom, if you look statewide, won by the closest margin in California. Now let's put this in perspective. I mean, it's still a very big margin. But the margin in California is not that big by California standards in a year that the Democrats are kind of thumping their chest and saying this was our year. I think it's one of the real peculiarities that there's going to have to be some soul searching on, saying what happened here. We had this abortion measure, Proposition 1, on the ballot that wins 70-30. The governor hasn't hit even his recall numbers yet from a few months ago. A lot of the statewide candidates, Lonnie Chen, they're in ranges that they should not be in any year, let alone a good Democratic year. And I think there's going to be a lot of hand wringing and analyzing and saying what happened. And one of the things that has happened clearly is this rightward shift of Hispanic voters that we have seen over the past two election cycles seems to have finally hit California. If you look at the most Hispanic dense congressional districts, the margins are kind of jaw dropping. They're tight, or I mean, I want to say they're competitive, but boy, these are like gaps that should be 45, 50 points, or like 12 and 15 points. And so there's something happening. There's a frustration that defied the national trend line in a year again where Democrats did so, I guess, well, at least in terms of defeating expectations, that didn't really happen in California, at least not statewide. So I don't want to read too much into it right now because it's still California. It's still an overwhelmingly blue state. But it is a very peculiar anomaly. And there are a lot of races, whether they're held by Republicans or Democrats, that are just far closer than they should be.
You know, Robin, given that, and when we look at California, I mean, it's a super majority, you know, with the legislature and the governor, you know, given, you know, that not as wide as a margin as, you know, say, the recall as it currently stands. What do you think a second term looks like for Governor Newsom or just for the Democratic Party in California? Where do they go from here? What message are they getting from voters?
Yeah, certainly the choice issue continues to be important. And Prop 1, I think, gave them a signal that both Democrats and Republicans support reproductive rights in the state of California. I think the governor is looking at a very different budget year. So he was able to be Santa Claus for a couple of years in a row because we had a great surplus. And I don't think anybody is expecting that in the coming year. So I think the governor is going to have to disappoint some of his constituency. And that's going to be tough because I think Democrats are going to be expecting some of those programs that they have supported in the past to continue to be funded heartily, and the money may or may not be there. So I think that's going to be the challenge. I do think he's going to continue to focus on climate, that has been a success for him, again, a very bipartisan success for him. And then I think, you know, he has signaled that homelessness, addressing homelessness is going to be a big priority. And in fact, you know, recently rejected cities' plans to deal with their homeless crisis and, you know, asked them to go back to the drawing board. So I think there was a sophistication to voters on voting by issue. And as Mike said, there's a lot of really close races. And I do think that that requires a level of engagement. And either you hit with voters in your message or you missed. I think of there's a race in Redwood City and there's, you know, separating two votes separating the candidates. So when you talk about every vote matters, it truly does. But in those races, it was very specific issues that moved voters to the polls. And I look at even here in Sacramento, a lot of progressive candidates won, but also Measure O passed. And that was a fairly conservative measure that, you know, businesses put on the ballot to address the homeless crisis. So again, I think there was a sophistication where voters really did look issue by issue. And we do need to take a pulse as to what voters were saying and look at those very specific issues and the messages they were sending.
Robin Swanson is a Democratic strategist and founder of Swanson Communications, and Mike Madrid is a Republican political consultant and co-founder of the Lincoln Project. Thank you both for making the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez.